Once again, I love it when we come back and my pals in New York are bumping in their own tweets that they have selected. So I'm going to read certain tweets and we'll put them up. But then New York decides what they want to use, and they're doing it right now. Once again, another reason to tweet the show at Jim Rome, because the folks in New York may select a tweet. Even if I don't, they'll build it. They'll put you on TV. You'll be a star. Into our third hour, we are live in the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. I am Jim Rome in Southern California. Benjamin Watson is an all-timer. He literally is one of the best of the best. We had him on to end hour number two. We had Pat Forty on in hour number one. We spent the entire first hour talking about Villanova and the bully, the beast, the dynasty. Jay Wright is a stone-cold killer. Best coach in the game right now, running the best program in the game. We covered that in hour number one. We talked about Steve Elkington making his triumphant return to the jungle, this time in the podcast. You know, I didn't want to give away too much of it, but it's absolutely amazing. And some of you know the story about Monty attacking a tub of custard. Some of you do not know that story. And this story is incredible. I want to play you part of this, and we bleep this out, because this gets pretty crass. They had a matchup in the 95 PGA, which Elk won. And then they had a rematch in the match play shortly thereafter. And Elk tells the story about going up against Monty again. And there is no love lost there. Elk enjoys beating Monty. I think more than anybody enjoys anything at all. But most of all, he enjoys telling that story about what happened in the match play when they ran into each other at a buffet during the event, an amazing buffet. And Elk tells this story as only Elk can. Now, I can't play the story the way Elk tells the story in the podcast. If you want the unedited version, you go to the podcast. If you want a taste of what that sounds like, it sounds like this.
Mate, that was the best story ever. That son of a
Yeah, not everybody knows that story. Do your thing.
Okay, so I win the PGA in 95, right? And I beat Monty. Monty. I play better than him. I don't give a We go into the players' lounge, and in the lounge, because there's only four players playing on the semifinals, there's only four of us in there, right? Or two at the time. So me and Lisa, my wife, were sitting over in the corner. They got this buffet out there, mate, that's so spectacular. They got, and Monty's over on the other side. He's got 25 people. He's got, you know, royalty over there. He's got Prince William or Prince William's brother who might have to a time or two or whatever. I'm eating a cheese sandwich over here because I can't eat when I'm playing. I get too nervous. So, and in the middle of this beautiful buffet is a custard castle, replica of the clubhouse at Wentworth is a castle. It's magnificent custard thing. I mean, mate, if you saw it, you'd say, me, that's a good design on that custard
the
castle.
The architecture on the custard castle.
Just on the architecture alone, Jimmy, is legendary.
You don't eat that.
No. So I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, this is great. And Monty gets up. He's at the end of the table. And he comes over. And he gets a dinner plate. And he takes out the ladies' locker room. He takes out the pro shop. He takes out the auditorium on the back side of the men's locker room. And he takes out the porch on the back of the back bar. And I'm thinking, me, he's just destroyed this thing. He must be going to just go over and give it to the whole people, the royal family. Mate, he sat at the table with one spoon. I looked at my wife, deadpan.
Oh, my God,
said,
Elk.
There's not a man in the world that can eat that much custard can beat me. I turned him over at 5-4, mate. He was done. He was out the gate. Fixed him.
Elk. Like I said, you've never heard the custard story like that. Maybe you've never heard the custard story, but if you have heard the custard story, you've never heard it like that. You can tell by how hard I was laughing. I've heard that story before, and it still just slayed. It absolutely killed me. So there's another reason to find the podcast if you have not yet already or aren't planning to do so after the show. It's absolutely incredible. There's no man who could eat that much custard who's going to beat me. I turned him over 5-4. And one more email. Jim, been listening to you since I was a wet behind the ears business student at USC back in the mid-90s. did some outside sales in SoCal, and listened to you all day while grinding around town. Now live in Boise, and I listen at lunch when I'm able to. I've heard you promoting the podcast now for a while, and I've been meaning to check it out. But the catalyst that made that happen was you pimping the elk interview. I took a few minutes yesterday, I loaded up the podcast, and now I spent the last hour laughing my ass off at the stories. I thought they were pretty good on the old show, but elk was made for the podcast. Great job. Congrats on the continued success, and thank you for doing what you do. Best, Chris McCall. Chris, thanks so much. And the thing about elk is he knows that. Elk knows the room. Elk knows where he was. Elk knows that as loose as he gets on this show, he can go next level with it and take it to the next step altogether on the podcast. He knows that. That's why he delivered the way he did. And that's why that was amazing. Anyway, your thoughts on the custard story. Meantime, the NFL draft does get underway 3 weeks from Thursday. I, for one, cannot wait for this. In fact, I'm more eager, I think, for the draft than the draft prospects. And they're the ones who are being poked and prodded. They're the ones who want to know where they're going to live and where they're going to work and how much they're going to get paid. And I still don't think these guys want it as badly as I do. And the reason for that, I already know where I live. I know where I'm going to work. I know where I'm paid or what I'm paid. And I still can't wait for this thing to happen because for me, it's going to represent the end of all the pre-draft buildup. The pre-draft buildup that is always weird. And in this case, weird is not good. Weird is scouts and analysts throwing out bizarre and made-up terms like suddenness, waistbender, or worse. You know, for the first month after the Super Bowl, it's fine. It's a little reminder that football still exists. There's not a hell of a lot else going on. So you're cool with it. But then as time drags on and every prospect has already been analyzed, there are still a few weeks left to kill. And that's when everything gets weird. And we've now officially reached DEFCON 2 when it comes to weirdness. And that's with the recent coverage of Josh Rosen. First, there was everybody freaking out about what his former coach, Jim Mora, had to say regarding Sam Darnold and how he'd be a better fit in Cleveland. And now everybody's freaking out because Jim Mora said that Rosen is smart. He told MMQB that Rosen, quote, needs to be challenged intellectually so he doesn't get bored. He's a millennial. He wants to know why. Millennials, once they know why, they're good. Josh has a lot of interest in life. If you can hold his concentration level and focus only on football for a few years, he will set the world on fire. He has so much ability, and he's a really good kid, end quote. And then Rosen appeared to respond with a pair of tweets. The first of which was, why? Followed by the shrug emoji. And then, hashtag, why? And then the second was, quote, opinions. Hashtag, things people take too seriously. You know, and I gotta say, the guy couldn't be more correct. The guy could not be more correct. I mean, why? 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 Guys, right? Why? Why? And people are taking this whole thing way too seriously. First off, I know that at this time of year, college coaches are typically jumping up and down on the table for their guys. So anything that's not that is going to be seen as a criticism. But are we really at the point in the draft evaluation process where saying that a guy is smart is a criticism? And are NFL coaches so weird about having a smart quarterback, a quarterback who wants to know the thought process behind every play call and every detail? Are we at a point where those coaches find that threatening? And the answer to both of those things apparently is yes. Now, could Jim Mora have worded his comments a little bit differently? Sure. But if you read a coach saying that his player is really smart and needs to be challenged intellectually, and that if he does, he will, quote, set the world on fire, and you read that as a reason to not draft him, then I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I know there are NFL people who will see this and think, yeah, that is a little bit concerning. Yeah, maybe we steer clear of this guy. But, I mean, how wrong would that be? Put another way, if you would rather have a dumb quarterback who's not interested in knowing why you do things or how you do things, you go right ahead. You draft somebody dumb. All things being equal, I think I'm going to take the smart guy. And if you don't want to draft Rosen, that's fine. There may be some very good reasons for not wanting to draft him. But the fact that he's smart is not one of them. Tom Brady wants to know the thought process behind every single play. And how's that worked out for the Patriots? That's not to say that Josh Rosen is the next Tom Brady. Nobody is. But to argue that being smart should be viewed as a bad thing, to me, is one of the dumbest things. And one more thing about this. It's kind of weird. That whole notion of the term millennial, the inclusion of the word millennial. If an NFL team is threatened by that, then they're going to be in for a very long draft because it's not like Rosen is the only millennial in that draft. In fact, I'm pretty sure most guys are pretty much the same age. That's kind of how the draft works. They get out and they're about the same age. It's not like you can draft a Gen Xer in 2018. And you probably wouldn't want to draft a baby boomer in this year's draft. I mean, sure, if you want somebody from the greatest generation on your roster, you'd be my guest. Just don't expect that guy to blaze a fast 40. What I'm saying is, to me, the draft cannot get here fast enough. That clock cannot spin quickly enough, and those calendar pages cannot fly off fast enough for me. Roll on, Arlington. Let's get there already. Because the hot takers are out in full force. Full force. 1-800-636-8686. And one email as we go to break. Rome, I cannot believe how immature this whole Josh Rosen and Jim Mora Jr. thing is. If you don't want to play for a team, just come out and say it like Eli did. If I were drafting in the top 30, I would not take this kid. Seriously, nobody draft this kid in the top 30. Signed, The Hoodie at pick 31.
We're on to Cincinnati.
Matt in Poland Springs. Were those people who fell for that aluminum ball in the microwave April Fool's trick? You are the real winners. All right, when we come back, Howard Beck joins us. We change up. We talk some basketball. He's a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. That's coming up next, and then one fat segment on the back end. Clones. I know there are plenty of you that had a bad night. I know, and how do I know? The same way I always know, by looking at your submissions, by hearing your telephone calls.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Howard Beck, turn your phone on. Howard Beck, fire up your blower. Howard Beck, I'm trying to effort you, but it's not going to work if your phone's not on. Or maybe it is. We are trying to find him. In the meantime, you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. It is Masters Week. You know that to be true. We've talked so much golf this week already. It's Masters Tuesday, but that does not mean that there isn't already high drama, because there is, which is good. Because the Cat and Lefty were on the course. Two guys with, if my math is right, 7 green jackets in the closet battling on the back nine at Augusta. Now, granted, it is Tuesday. It is not Sunday. And Elk's got thoughts. Again, I'm steering you to the podcast. He talks about even at age 47, even with Tiger coming back the way he has, like how much of a factor he expects these guys to be on the back end of the weekend. And again, go to the podcast and you'll hear that. And I want to make that point again. It's Tuesday, not Sunday. But you got a couple of guys with a reputation. Lots of reputations for getting after it. Now, granted, Lefty is wearing a freaking Oxford shirt on the course. And it looks straight up like he came off the Husky rack. This was earlier today. And you want to check out the getup on this guy. Biz casual. Not a polo, but a full button-down. I'm a little disappointed that he didn't accessorize that with a cell phone holster right there on his bat. Belt, I should say. In the meantime, all our efforting paid off, because here is our guest, a senior NBA writer at Bleacher Report, the host of the Full 48 podcast, very good friend of the program, and still the reigning Red Vine King of the entire association, Howard Beck joins us. Howard, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Good, Romy. What is up?
Howard, always good to talk to you, but especially today. Couldn't wait to get your thoughts on Jason Kidd. Let me start right there. I bring this up because Jason Kidd was named as a member of the Hall of Fame class of 2018, and you spent some time recently with him, Howard, which is significant because that was the first extended interview that he has done since he was fired in Milwaukee. So first off, how did the conversation come to be, and how well did you know him before you sat down with him?
You know, it's funny, Jim, because I never covered Jason on a day-to-day basis in my beat writing days. I covered a couple months of his 1 year with the Knicks. Didn't know each other that well, but we've had our conversations intersected here and there over the years. I, like a lot of people, I'm sure, had put out feelers through channels back when he got fired, saying, listen, I'm sure he's laying low for a bit, but if and when he's ready to talk, would love to chat with him. He could come on the podcast. We could sit down, whatever it may be. And then, you know, it was kind of, no, he's laying low. And then a few weeks back, heard back that, listen, he is ready to chat, and though you guys don't know each other well, maybe this is actually the best way for him to kind of reemerge, put his voice back out there. I think because of the fact that, you know, I think it was clear to Jason and some folks around him that I wasn't going to go easy on him, for one, and I was, you know, not, you know, we didn't have an established relationship one way or the other, neither pro nor con, and so I think that probably helped. So we spent some time together. I went out to Phoenix. He's living outside of Phoenix. We had breakfast and just, you know, BS for a while. Just got to know each other for a bit. We both got Bay Area roots. We just talked about growing up in the Bay Area. Talked a little bit about, you know, just basketball stuff. And it was really comfortable. It was the most I'd ever really chatted with Jason, just informally. Then we went back to his home. Sat in the backyard for a while on a very nice 80-degree day or so in Phoenix while it was freezing back here in New York.
Right.
And then we had the interview, and I presented to him. I said, listen, I've been making calls. These are the things I've heard from folks in Milwaukee. These are the things I've heard from folks in Brooklyn. This is where people think you might have gone wrong or off track or didn't quite know how to handle situations. And to his credit, I thought he addressed all that very well, not defensive, but did defend himself. And people took that, you know, through whatever lens they wanted to.
Howard Beck joining us. All right, so Jason Kidd is one of the few people, Howard, to make that transition from playing to coaching immediately. And he was one of the all-time great players. That means he's never been involved in basketball or never not been involved in basketball for essentially his entire life. Now that he's had a little bit of time to reflect, where do you think he is in terms of his time as a head coach?
I think he feels more comfortable with his abilities as a head coach now. I mean, I think, well, he didn't say it outright. You know, I asked him probably three different ways. Were you ready for this? Was it too soon? Because personally, I don't think a guy is ready. As smart as Jason Kidd is about the game, as steeped in the game as he is, as great of a playing career as he had, the idea of taking off your jersey, putting on a coat and tie and saying, I'm the head coach now, just weeks later, days later, I'm not sure is the best path. It didn't work out that well for him, although he rallied in Brooklyn that year. And it didn't work out that well for Derek Fisher, who did something similar, going straight from playing for the Thunder to coaching the Knicks. Now, that said, of course, nobody can succeed coaching the Knicks. but, you know, I think Jason realizes that there were some things he didn't know about how to put together a staff, about just the day-to-day organizing of the team, structure of practices, all those things. It takes some time to get up to speed on. I think he's in a better place now. And I think, you know, look, the record is mixed, to say the least, in Milwaukee. But I also think that team, to a point that Jason Kidd has made, that team is young, and it is still trying to find its identity. And I don't know that, you know, that anybody coaching that team right now would have anything more than an up-and-down ride, because that's who they are. That's who the roster is. So, you know, if Jason Kidd is hired again, and I don't know if there's any guarantee that that's going to happen, but if Jason Kidd gets another crack in this next round of coach hirings, I think he'll be a much better equipped and more mature version of himself than he was when he jumped right into it in Brooklyn a few years back.
We're talking to Howard Beck. So one final thought on that. When you made your phone calls and you heard what people had to say about him, I'm sure one of the raps that came back was he just pushed guys too hard. Like, he would point to his own career and to the careers of guys like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, who work like crazy. Was he expecting players to put in the same level of work that he put in? And is that too high of an expectation?
Yes and yes. And though he was reflective about that, he didn't exactly concede the point. Like, I think he feels like he's still right to do that. And so if you're going to hire him, I think that's what you're buying into. You're going to have to either get assurance from him in the interview that he's ready to moderate his own impulses a little bit, or maybe you want that. Maybe you think that that's what your team needs, and maybe you also have to go into realizing that a coach who takes that tack, who is relentless, who is that taxing and demanding, they sometimes have a shelf life. And, you know, that's why we saw Scott Skiles burn teams out back in the day. We've heard rumblings about that with Tibbs, not only in Chicago, but even with the current team in Minnesota. You hear that from folks around the league sometimes, that that style of coaching might have a limited impact in today's NBA and with today's NBA players. And so, you know, is Jason Kidd going to moderate that a little bit? Or is that just going to be his style? And are you, and do you have the kind of team that can take that? And maybe you need a more veteran team for that. Maybe the young guys just don't respond to that, or at least don't respond to it year after year. So we'll see. But, you know, there's that aspect of it, Jim, and there's also this, that Jason, while I found him to be much more personable and engaging when we sat down a couple weeks ago, in general, his persona on the sidelines, in practices, with players and with the media, he's kind of always had this, like, distance, this bit of distance that he puts between himself and you, whoever you may be. I don't know that he has learned to get to balance that out. You know, we talk about how Pop has got this ability to be so demanding of his players and tear into him at times, but then put that arm around him, give him a hug, give him some encouragement. You have to be able to do both. And I don't know if Jason Kidd has found that right balance yet to give his guys, you know, some tough love along with just the tough driving directives.
You know, it really is a fascinating point that you make, Howard, because I've known him a long, long time. And I, even as a media guy, I've always had a very good relationship with him, but he can be guarded, he can be intimidating, and he may not be that guy to ever put your arm around you. But I knew him. I've told the story a million times, Howard, but he came on my show the night after Everett came over the table when he was coming out of Cal. And I'll never forget Jason Kidd. Number one, he could have come off the show. He could have canceled, and he did not. And I'll never forget that he did the interview and then walked off the set and looked back at me and said, "Hey, Rome, good luck with those phone calls," and gave me a little bit of a wink. And he and I have always had a really good relationship. So I think that maybe even if he's not there yet in terms of putting that arm around that guy and saying, "Hey, I get it. I understand you and it." That's not to say that he won't get there. You'd probably agree with that. Now, a guy who does understand that, of course, is Steve Kerr. You had him on your podcast a few weeks back. This has not been the easiest season for Golden State, but then again, Kerr would not expect sympathy from anybody at all. What's your sense of what he's made of the season they've had thus far?
It's interesting. I think, you know, when you get to this point in that run with the Warriors, whether you're Steve Kerr, whether you're Bob Myers, whether you're one of those core players, I think there's a certain zen that just comes with it. Like, we've been to three straight finals. We've won two championships. Sure, we've had kind of a weird up-and-down season. Yeah, we've had some injuries. Yeah, we don't know what Steph is going to look like in, you know, in the playoffs or when he's back. But I get the sense, and, you know, it was a few weeks ago that I was out there, and so they've been through some more since then. I get the sense that the Warriors, they can afford to have a more – relaxed is maybe the wrong word, but like just this zen mentality. They know who they are. They know what they're capable of. They know they've still got probably the best trio of players, even without Steph. So, you know, they're ahead of the game in that regard. But I think they also know that the Rockets may present the stiffest challenge they've had since this run began. And, you know, I think we're all looking forward to that eventual showdown, assuming it happens. But I don't get the sense that the Warriors are sweating anything that's happened so far. They know that the real season begins a week from Saturday, a week from Sunday probably for them. And then we'll see. But we are going into this postseason with the Warriors with that huge question mark. When is Steph coming back? What's he going to look like? Can he get back to 100%?
All right, so where does that leave us? And a final thought from you. If you had to say it right now, how do you see the Western Conference playoffs going? Are the Rockets now the team to beat, or is Golden State the title favorite until somebody does beat them?
No, I think the Warriors are still the team to beat. And it's not just the proverbial, hey, you know, you got to favor them until someone beats them, and you give them that because they're the defending champion. There's part of that. But it's also just the fact that there are only a few, like, true, like, just, you know, mutant superstars in this game, and Durant is one of those guys. And, you know, even without Steph, you've got an MVP-caliber player there in Durant who is pretty much unguardable. And I know the Rockets, they can switch everything, and they got all these, you know, 6'7", 6'8", guys that they can put on him. I still think that a Warriors team that has been there, that has is proven, that has established chemistry and still has three All-Stars, is still the odds-on favorite. And by the way, you know, we haven't completely lost track of the fact that, that Chris Paul, James Harden do not have great postseason resumes of their own. And until we see otherwise from them, it's fair to wonder whether they're going to be different this time.
No, we have not lost track of that fact at all. All right, so one last thought then. In the East, how different, Howard, are the 76ers without Joel Embiid? And if he comes back quickly, could they make any noise in their first year in the postseason?
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like this, but a week ago, and it was unfortunately just the day before Embiid went down, I did one of our spotlight videos in which I said, listen, there's a path to the Eastern Conference Finals for the Sixers, which I would rarely say about a young team that's never even been in the playoffs before. But there's a path because the East is really unsettled, because the Sixers still have a shot to get home court in the first round, and because all of these teams have blemishes. There are just no sure things in the East right now. And, yeah, if you draw the Cavs in the second round, you know, I'm going to probably put my money on LeBron over anybody. But the Sixers, with Embiid, can make a run, a good run. Without Embiid, you know, Ben Simmons is still phenomenal, and he's going to do some great things for that team, but you just don't have that 1-2 punch that you need to make a deep run. But they have the talent and the shooting, and I think just those intangibles that make them a potential really fun team in the playoffs that could put together a run. But they got to get Embiid back. And we don't know exactly when that's going to be.
He was the guy who got the first sit-down interview with Jason Kidd after he was fired, a senior NBA writer at Bleacher Report, the host of the Full 48 podcast, good friend of the program, and once again, the reigning emperor for the Red Vines of the NBA. Howard Beck, my guest. Howard, great to have you back. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks, man.
Nice job, Howard. Howard Beck, the Red Vine king of the association. All right, when we return, I've got some thoughts. I might finish that thought on the Masters. Slump busting. Yeah, I'd bang telephone calls if they were there. We had one monster call earlier today. Mark in Hollywood. Check out my Facebook page if you want to relive that great moment. And don't forget, Podcast Tuesday is Podcast Monday, but it drops. In fact, it already dropped. Elk did the podcast finally. Steve Elkington, and that is available for you to check out anytime you want. You should wait until after the show is over and then do it and give it the time that it deserves. In fact, we've got a bonus podcast coming. It's going to be two this week because we missed last week. So I'll tell you about that a little bit later on. Right now, time for sports. Last chance to get through. I'm feeling pretty good about a huge call today. In fact, I know there's going to be a huge call. I'll be back time that thing. Dude, do you know what you're going to do? Back time it. Make sure that you are right. Huge call is coming up momentarily. Clones, snoring is disrespectful. It's offensive. You've got to stop doing it right now. Get a Zipa. Make everybody happy. Zipa is 100% guaranteed to work. Zipa is happy Z spelled backwards. Z-Y-P-P-A-H. Z-Y-P-P-A-H.com. Still time for you to get through. 1-800-636-8686. Masters Week. Greatest week in golf, arguably, may have one of the best fields of all time. Look at all the guys. And if not the best field of all time, top to bottom, certainly the most wide open field of all time. Look at it. Look at all the guys who can win this thing. The Cat is a legitimate contender. Ask Elk. Phil is in the mix. Bubba is coming off a win at Riv and in the match play. Rory just obliterated Bay Hill. Justin Thomas won the Honda. Jordan Spieth played great golf in Houston. He looks like he might be ready. Hasn't had success in recent years. Not there, but he might be ready to mount another charge. Justin Rose makes more birdies than anybody at Augusta. He's already won this year. Jason Day is playing well. And this is before we even get to DJ, who might have a green jacket of his own if he did not try tobogganing the steps at his rental house last year without a sled, allegedly. About the only thing predictable about this year's Masters is that the Cat has another lady problem. You talk about a tradition unlike any other. TMZ Sports reports that Eldrick's latest ex signed an NDA, but is not staying quiet. and that she's got a bone to pick over the cat allegedly stepping out with somebody else. And would you be surprised to know that the money offered to keep quiet apparently was not as much as she wanted? Yeah, well, join the club. Look, I'm not here to pile on the cat again for something like that. I've already done that. We all have. I'm here to say I hope this guy makes a run this weekend. And in fact, I want everybody else to join that sprint too. Because if golf is better with the cat, then imagine golf with the rest of the young guns pushing the cat to keep making birdies. And for Phil to keep pulling shots out of thin air. For Bubba to cut the corner on 13. For Jordan to step to the tee on the 12th and not end his tournament in Rays Creek like he did the last 2 years. For Rory to finally get over and complete the Grand Slam. John Rahm is in the mix. Hell, about Freddie Couples. Love Freddie Couples. Could he work up a little more Augusta magic? Come on, Freddie, one more time. Or Ricky. How about Ricky finally getting a major? If Sergio can get it done, you know Rick can. Couple more days. Then we get the pageantry, the tradition, the champions dinner, the par three. And then comes the tradition unlike any other in a tournament unlike any other. And with the cat on the prowl in an absolute stack field, we could be in for a classic.
The golf course looks good. My golf swing field looks good. I like my chances.
In case you missed it earlier on the program, Steve Elkington on our podcast picked Tiger to win it all. How does he look to you right now, and how do you think he's going to do this week?
I think the cat's going to win the Masters. I just looking at the math, mate.
Holy shit, Elk, did you just say, what I think that you just said? I think the cat's going to win the Masters?
Yeah, mate, I think the cat's going to win the Masters, and I'm going to tell you why. He has sort of, I want to say it in my own terms, he's surfed the gauntlet. He's been embarrassed. He's been humiliated. He's been ridiculed. He's been abused by the media, and now he's come back out, and he's popped out of this pimple that's just f***ing burst like a zit, and now he's in love. Everyone's in love with him. He's putting good. He's hitting wedges good. Mate, the rest of it's there. And let me just say this. Augusta, after playing two rounds, first 36 holes, Thursday, Friday, Cat's going to be there 140, 141, two or three under. He's going to be poised, right? And the pressure that Mickelson and Tiger are putting on the field is enormous this week, mate, because there's going to be some guys up there going to faint. They can't f***ing do it, mate. They're going to shit themselves. They're going to squirt the sandwich out the back. I mean, it's not going to happen.
And yes, Elk did address the issue of Tiger's driver. But it's hard to pick against a guy who pops out of a burst zit.
Popped out of this pimple that's just f***ing burst like a zit.
Hey, Alvy, is that what it sounds like when a zit bursts? Dude, what is that? Alvin, I know I've given you autonomy with your sound library, but I didn't know you had a zit in your library. Wow, dude, is that what a zit sounds like? Why don't you hit that thing with some proactive? That's incredible, Alvin. Is it time for the huge call yet, Alvy? When? All right, so don't forget, Elk. I know I've hit that hard. The reason I've hit that as hard as I have is because we really haven't had a podcast like that one ever. This is number 30. I'm proud of all 29 prior to it, but there's never been one like this one. Hawk, what are you doing here?
Nothing.
If you're doing nothing, then get out of here. He normally does not come in the studio during the program. This tweet is from XSwafX. Never look forward to the end of the show, but I can't wait to hear the podcast. Once again, you want to find it on iTunes if you're an iPhone user. Android players, look for it there. And you can also find it on jimrome.com if you do not have a smartphone. And as a last course, if you have no idea what any of that means and you need help, call this number right now, 1-800-636-8686. Hawk will pick up and he will direct you to the podcast. We're trying to find a way to get you there. We're proud of it. The Masters, a tradition unlike any other. Field's wide open. Who do you like? I got to admit, I did not expect Elk to say that. I figured that he said that the cap might be a factor come Sunday. I did not expect him to just lay right out and say, you know what, Jimmy? He actually hit me with a gym mate. The Cat's going to win this week. Today he had a practice round. He eagled two par fives on the back. Yeah, I know it's Tuesday. I know it's a practice round. Freddie Couples said that he looks like the Tiger of 10 years ago. Freddie Couples said that. Freddie would know. And man, if Freddie says it, it's true. Time for the huge call. If I didn't get you a telephone call and you're still on hold, I am very sorry about that. But we did have a monster come in earlier. Alvy, I've already done the billboard. Stop looking at me like that. And stop playing that zit drop. That one, Alvy. Huge call, as you know, brought to you by Zipa, and it sounds like this.
But, Mark, I don't get it. You seem to be one of the smarter idiots to come out of that pee and urinal cake-colored cesspool. How could you even ponder last night going any differently for you jackasses? And you have the nerve to diss my Philly and Pennsylvania affiliations? Okay, that's fine. Let's run down the recent history, and you let me know if you and your useless degree in botany can keep up. First, during the season, Penn State obliterated your Division II football team 42-13, and then not only do you get proceeded to get blown out by Ohio State, but then you finish off that bleep show with being the only Big Ten team to not win a bowl game, you absolute clowns. And if that wasn't enough, the ultimate Michigan man himself, the adultering, plastic chin-wearing leader of that cult that bilks people out of money, inventor of the TB12 method, Tom Brady, was whacked by my Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl because Tommy and the hoodie were too busy making out with their kids. And on top of all of that, you still had a chance to salvage a shred of respect by falling far through the tourney to the championship game, only to get your front-running asses handed to you by who? A school from Philly. Look, Mark, I'm a solutions-oriented guy. I'm not here to help. I'm here to hurt. Unfollowing everyone on Twitter, which he has, Jim, doesn't make this go away. You need to do what that seizing spasmatic Chris Webber never did, take responsibility for wetting yourself, and it'll all go away. And next time you come at me, Philly or Penn State, I'm going to peacock my Eagles Super Bowl and Penn State NIT championship all the way over to your coke-riddled, racist, post-apocalyptic city of Boston and shove it down your throat with a chaser of Samuel Adams lager and clam chowder. It's 9:52, and Michigan still sucks. Ann Arbor's a hoe.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Lava. Mark in Hollywood with the huge call. My thanks to our guests. We had Pat Forty, Benjamin Watson, and Howard Beck. My XR4TI crew coming up big. There is your huge call. More of the same tomorrow. And for the last time today, I will direct you to the Jim Rome podcast. Steve Elkington getting extremely loose. Elk, unlike you have ever heard him before. Make sure you find it. Thank you so much for listening. See you tomorrow. We're out.